This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 14, Why We Love Low-Budget Cinema, part 2. In the part 1 of this discussion, we discussed our seminal B-movie, for lack of a better phrase, movie influences. And we discussed the importance of eating Raoul, the kitchenware to the head, frying pan murder, black comedy.
Starring Paul Bartel, Mary
Warnoff. And we also discussed the incredible Rudy Ray Moore pimp culture celebration, also allegedly a comedy called Dolomite. And, the third one was the William Shatner epic, in which he played a white supremacist, I Hate Your Guts.
I Hate Your Guts. Yes.
A.K.A. Intruder, which I saw when I was 15, I believe, at a local grindhouse cinema here in Toronto. Now we're going to discuss Jeff's low-budget favorites, the three films that influenced him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say these are my absolute favorites, but these are three movies that definitely had a lasting impact on me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because before I got into horror per se, I really sort of had an affinity for low-budget cinema. I really like the work of Russ Meyer. Mm-hmm. And in earlier podcasts, we talked about City TV being a network that was sort of fearless in the sense that it would show these exploitation, a.k.a. grindhouse movies, uncut.
Yeah, really early in the morning.
Right. And we also have another network called Showcase that did the same as well. I mean, it's still on, but again, like City TV, it's a shadow of its former self. Mm-hmm. So I remember they would always have these Russ Meyer fests. And I remember watching these Russ Meyer movies, and I mean, as a young, I'm not going to say, I guess, post-pubescent boy, but you know, I mean, you watch a Russ Meyer movie.
It ushered in your... your adolescence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're just seeing these bucks and beauties. And,
Russ Meyer was known for, I guess, dirt bike, biker, buxom women movies.
Well, yeah, I mean...
really made very little sense. There were sort of roving gangs of very sexually liberated female protagonists.
Yeah, no, I mean, Russ Meyer he's considered to be one of the forebears of what's called nudie cutie, in the sense like they weren't porn, but they were basically movies that would show as much flesh as you could legally get away with at the time.
In the late 60s.
And his early movies, such as like The Immoral Mr. T's and whatnot, I mean, they were fairly, you know, they're just sort of these kind of silly romps where, you know, somebody would have, through some contrivance, they'd be able to see like a lot of these nude women, and they would see, you know, and of course, Russ Meyer, I mean, the guy, he was a breast fetishist, so I mean, the women were very, for lack of a better term,
endowed.
Yes, indeed. So, and then of course, Russ Meyer did flirt with mainstream success. One of his most successful movies was Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which was the script was written by
Roger Ebert.
Yeah, amazingly enough. And of course, the most iconic Russ Meyer film is obviously Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill.
Yeah,
which
spawned a 80s metal band of the same name.
He did. Not Kill
Not
Kill.
The Kill Kill. Yeah.
Faster Pussycat. funny enough, I mean, Faster Pussycat was quite... It was not a typical Russ Meyer film in the sense there was no nudity.
No, it was just... it was black and white, and it just had, I guess, sort of biker women with tight tube tops.
But
I
these
remember
were women...
I saw it in the theater, and I was sort of, I was disappointed because his reputation preceded him.
Yeah, exactly. They're talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You expect to see more gore, you see Faust Pussycat, you expect to see more
boobage.
Boobs. Yeah, but I mean, you know, you had your, Tour of Satana, you know, the
incredible,
iconic.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you you had a T-shirt at one point, did you
not? I did.
A Fast Pussy Guy T-shirt. Now, with Russ Meyer, I mean, I appreciate those movies, but when he was nearing the end of his career, he went into a whole other level entirely. His movies became these crazy, like, anarchic, like, I would say, like, almost like, you know, X-rated Looney Tunes cartoons. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe beginning with Super Vixen.
Yeah, which I just saw recently.
And then, you know, his last film was Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, which was unbelievably incredible. The one I want to talk about is a film he made called Up. Mm-hmm. This was the second, now not to be confused with the Disney Pixar film.
No one would.
No, definitely not. This was a film he made. This was his second last proper film. His last film was sort of like a kind of straight to video. Well, not at that time, but it was sort of just like a showcase of one of his favorite Bucks and Beauties. But Up was quite an unbelievable movie. I mean, it started out, and so you got to remember, I'm watching this movie on TV, right? And the movie begins with this character by the name of Adolf Schwartz, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who is, of course, you know, basically a stand-up
for Hitler.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's getting, let's just say, he's getting motorboated, okay? He's getting whipped, beaten, sodomized, and eventually he gets eaten to death in a bathtub with piranhas, right? Mm. So there's this whole sort of murder mystery aspect, who killed Adolf Schwartz? And before you know it, you're introduced to this sort of, you know, a small town populated by these very eccentric characters. You have another Russ Meyer favorite, Kitten Navidad, who acted in the role of Greek Chorus. And she commented on the action in a dubbed voice, because Navidad was not a very proficient speaker of the English language. But in addition to commenting on what was going on, she also didn't have a stitch of clothing on, so that was interesting as well.
Well, it's like that Woody Allen movie, also uses the
Mighty Aphrodite, yeah. But, I mean, you know, this
also
was
with a buxom, starlet.
Mira Sorvino, but, you cannot really compare Navidad to Mira Sorvino. Anyhow, The ingenue in this film was Raven Delacroix, who played a wonderfully named character named Margot Winchester. Raven Delacroix, are you familiar with her?
No.
Beautiful. I mean, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I mean, she was this buxom brunette. I mean, she looked like this pneumatic Barbara Steele. I mean, Barbara Steele is gorgeous. I mean, you know, with these piercing eyes. I mean, you know, and this is Raven Delacroix. So she plays Margot Winchester, and she comes into town, and of course, all eyes are on her. All attention is on Margaret Winchester. And, I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole plot, but, I mean, you know, she ends up working at this diner owned by this couple. And, she's lots of softcore shenanigans. But this whole sort of, you know, murder mystery is the central device of Up. And
is there like an Ava Braun in this movie as well?
There is near the end. That mean now you just sort of spoil the dinner. But anyhow,
Goering, how many more Nazi spoilers?
but anyway, I mean, the thing was quite amazing. I mean, before I even get into Russ Meyer, I mean, like I said before, his films were like Larry films. It's like he just did not give a shit. I mean, they're anarchic in every sense of the word. I mean, the guy was showing like, you know, interracial coupling, both, you know, male and female. Male, and female. I mean, the guy, it was like every taboo was being broken. And the women, is like, you know, I mean, this was one of the reasons why people love Faster Pussycat. It's the same with Up. The women kick ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fighters. Yes, many times they're, you know, they don't have a
situation. In various states of undress.
Exactly, but the women kick ass.
Yeah.
So, really funny thing that happens in Up. I mean, it's funny because we talked about a movie recently called The Nest where there was a cop by the name of Homer. And then,
oh, a pest control agent by the name of Homer.
Oh, sorry, that's right. But there's a cop by the name of Homer. And so there's this bar, and they hire Margaret Winchester, Raven Delacroix, as a waitress. And because she's so, just, you know, such a sight to behold, you know, they become so successful that they open up a second bar. And they have this, and she's the, you know, the star attraction. And they have this character who comes in, and he's this sort of Paul Bunyan-esque lumberjack character, with this sort of blonde haircut, very, very Aryan looking, actually, and an axe, and he just starts drinking and drinking and drinking. All of a sudden, he just goes on this crazy rampage, and he grabs Margot and the female proprietor of the bar, and he carries them off as if he was, like, you know, Frankenstein or something, and he takes them into the woods, and he's being chased by Homer, and there's this bloody battle ensues with, like, axes and chainsaws, and, I mean, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. So, I mean, besides the fact that you have, you know, like, as I said before, these extremely buxom women that appeal to, you know, a very young...
appeal to our base sensibilities both then and now.
And then and now, exactly. Just a real sense of anarchy. The sense of, like, this is a film where, like, anything and everything goes, happening. And, I mean, you have, you know, I mean, they were rated X, but they weren't hardcore. They were softcore. But, I mean, yeah, they're not for kids. But, I mean, there's a lot of violence. But there was, but again, like, considering the fact that, like, every taboo was being broken, and this was in the 70s, yeah. You know, loved it. Absolutely loved it. So, I mean, Russ Meyer, one of my formative influences. And, I mean, I'm not going to say Up is my favorite Russ Meyer film. That could be Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, but it's up there. I really, no pun intended.
Yeah, okay. And next?
Yeah, man, the next film I want to talk about, I mean, you know, you were talking about Eating Raoul, starring the...
Paul Bertel and Mary Warnock.
And so how did you describe Mary Warnock?
Attenuated limbs
and whatnot.
Yeah, she's a sort of a lanky, you know, stretch-jawed, I guess, yeah. Interesting features, I believe, Modigliani-esque.
Yeah, that's what we said. Yeah, and as I said before, I mean, Mary Warnoff is a very interesting character in the sense that she was a member of Andy Warhol's Factory,
yeah.
Along with like Candy Darling and mm-hmm. you know, some of these. Anyhow,
about whom, you know, Lou Reed wrote several songs.
There you go. Yeah, Walking the Wild Side and whatnot.
Yeah.
And Candy Says.
Candy Says.
So the film I'm going to talk about is Roger Corman production.
One of our favorites.
Rock and Roll High School.
Roger Corman.
Oh,
the
we love
best,
Roger Corman.
Piranha.
Yeah.
You name it, we love it.
So, yeah, this film is Rock and Roll High School. Now, of course, I'm going to, you know, with my terrible singing voice, rock and roll. I mean, this was, I am an unabashed Ramones fan.
Me too.
I love the Ramones. I mean, I have a Joe Ramone tattoo. Rock and Roll High School is... You know, this is a world that was created where the Ramones are as big, if not bigger, than the Beatles.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And now this was a Corman production. It wasn't directed by Corman. It was actually directed by Alan Arkush. But it starred Mary Warnoff and it starred Paul Bartel. I mean, they played sort of the authority figures in the high school. Other actors of note were PJ Souls, who was in Halloween. She played the main character, Riff Randall, and who at one point delivers...
She's super cute.
Yeah, super cute, but not, you know, at one point she kind of delivers her own version of Rock and Roll High School, which was not, you know, kind of a little bit hard on the ears, but it is, whatever. I mean, you also have Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother.
Yeah.
playing, what was the game, the Eagle Bauer or something, the character's name was? Yes, Eagle Bauer.
Variant on Opie, just because he's his brother? No,
it's
a unique name.
Dick Miller, who's been in tons of Corman productions. Anyway, Rock and Roll High School. I love this movie. I mean, I loved it before I liked the Ramones. I love it even more now that, you know, after I became like the biggest Ramones fan. This film is, again, it's another one of these sort of movies where it's like anything goes. Mm-hmm. It's this like anarchic school where, you know, they're in this town, and all of a sudden the Ramones are coming to town, and,
yeah.
You know, Ramones mania, hysteria ensues, and Riff Randall is the biggest Ramones fan of them all, and she...
Even though she's just sort of cheerleader-esque.
Yeah.
You wouldn't take her for a Ramones fan.
No, it's true. I mean, there's a great scene where she basically...
Varsity kind of attire and everything.
Uh-huh. There's a great scene where she has this fantasy where she's, you know, in her bedroom, and there's Joey Ramone, who, I mean, I love Joey. I mean, Joey is...
He looks like a praying mantis. Looked. May he rest
yeah,
in peace.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, he's nobody's heartthrob, okay? But there he was singing this incredibly beautiful song, I Want You Around, serenading her. And the high school was called Vince Lombardi High School.
Nice.
And
As a point of interest right now, I'm wearing a Green Bay Packers scarf. Mm-hmm. And I guess I went to a Green Bay Packers football game. That's my favorite team, Lambeau Field. Lombardi, he was the coach with all the cliches.
Mm-hmm.
He wore the fedora. He got them to, you know, do their best. And so, yeah, an interesting little nod to moronic jock culture.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not a jock, so I'm not a sports fan, but what have you. Anyway, there's so many amazing scenes. I mean, there's a scene where the Ramones ride into town for the first time, and they're singing, I Just Want to Have Something to Do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where, I mean... Story
of my life, yeah.
Didi Ramone, this is kind of funny. I mean, the guy had originally 5 lines, okay? Which were subsequently cut down to 4, mm-hmm. then 3. and then two, and then basically one.
Probably for the best, if you hadn't heard him speak.
Hey, because, I mean, the guy was just, either he was totally wasted or he was a bad actor, so he has this immortal line where he says, hey, pizza, it's good, let's dig in.
Hey, pizza, it's good, yeah. Huh.
That's Dee Dee's, you know? It's sort of like Phantom of the Paradise, Ace Frehley. Basically just squawks like a parrot throughout that entire movie, but... yeah, so anyway, so getting back to, I mean, Rock and Roll High School director Alan Arkush, it had a very interesting genesis. Corman always wanted to capitalize on, you know, the prevailing trends. And
Youth culture,
etc. And in the late 70s, disco was big, right? Mm-hmm. So originally, the script was called Disco High. And Arkush basically said, you know what, disco is sort of on the way out. Like, let's look at some other band that we can revolve our film around. And they considered Devo.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they considered Van Halen, believe it or not.
That is ridiculous. I did not know that.
That is true. So, yeah. I mean, finally they
Although they did do, they had that video, I think, Hot for Teacher, which is in the library, yeah. And mm-hmm. Eddie Van Halen's playing on the library table there, and yep. That was mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah, so anyway.
Because they could have probably pulled it off.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, so you got to figure, I mean, this was like in the late 70s, early 80s,
yeah.
So this would be, you know, super early in their career, but I don't know, I mean, Rock and Roll High School, as far as I'm concerned, is so indelibly tied with the Ramones, I just can't picture any other band, you know, doing this, but, you know, I mean, of course you have your rock and roll loving high schoolers versus your stern authority figure, kind of almost like Footloose-esque in a sense, you know what I mean? Like trying, oh, we got to ban all these forms of rocking
dancing.
And rolling, or as Mr. Burns would say, have the Rolling Stones killed after the Ramones serenade.
You old bastard.
Happy, exactly. Yeah. So the film culminates in this this concert, you know, where the Ramones are playing, and a couple of interesting facts, some extras in the... It was basically a real Ramones concert. I mean, it wasn't... It was filmed... It was a Ramones concert for fans that they filmed to put into the movie. And in the front row, you'll find Darby Crash from The Germs.
Interesting.
Seminal L.A.
Punkers. Yeah, L.A. Punkers.
Another interesting extra that was in this sort of concert scene was Sherry Curry from The Runaways.
Well.
Yeah. So...
It's kind of a good movie, the biopic of The Runaways.
The one with Chris's, the girl from Twilight?
Can't remember.
Who played Joan Jett. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Actually, it's interesting to say that because Kim Fowley, who was the Runaways manager, just passed away
mm-hmm.
a couple days ago. He was played by Michael Shannon in that biopic, and Dakota Fanning played Sherry Curry.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning, and I guess there was some issue with, you know, they only depicted one of the characters and they didn't give enough... I guess,
well,
screen time
Lita,
to the Joan Jett character.
Lita Ford. I mean, that's...
You know, another metal icon.
I mean, Lita Ford was in The Runaways. I mean, we all sort of...
She was barely in that movie, although she had a huge career. Very briefly, she did a duet with Ozzy Osbourne, and then... But she was sort of excised
Kiss
from
me
this
once,
movie. Kiss Me Twice.
Kiss
Me Deadly.
Exactly.
Which sounds like a title of a, you know, kind of a bad horror movie we definitely watch. But she was sort of excised from the movie. But
totally.
And enough about The Runaways.
No. So we'll get back to Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, great movie. Ends with the destruction of the high school.
Yeah.
Mary
Everyone's
Warnoff.
Dream at that age.
Yeah, of course. Mary Warnoff, who played Miss Togar. Paul Bartel was a teacher in the school. I mean, eventually, of course, they succumbed to the power of the Ramones. They were rocking and rolling with everybody else. Absolutely loved it. So that would be my one of my second picks for one of my you know, formative low-budget cinema films that I really, really enjoy.
Yeah, I guess, lastly, I guess we're going to discuss Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, Phantom of the Paradise. This one is... so this is another CDTV discovery. I mean, here I was. Can't remember my exact age. Definitely, you know, I was in the formative year, 16, 17. Couldn't sleep. It was about 3 in the morning. Flipping through the dials, passed by a few stupid infomercials for, like, Ronco, you know, hairspray, whatever the hell you're selling at the time. You know, food dehydrators. All of a sudden, I see... The movie's maybe 20 minutes in, and I see this man, you know, with his face falling to a record press, you know, coming out disfigured, and I just couldn't take my eyes off this movie. This was this Technicolor Dayglow marvel full of, like, you know, crazy, you know, with music and songs.
Yeah.
And
not to be confused with Kiss meets Phantom of the...
No, although, I mean, there is...
There's a tie-in, yeah.
There's a sort of a tie-in, but I mean, okay, so this is a Brian De Palma movie. I mean, this was
all things.
An early movie
Mr.
by Brian...
Hitchcock ripoff himself, arguably.
Indeed.
Although,
well,
yeah, I like De Palma.
I'm a fan of early De Palma. I mean, Sisters is incredible. Body Double is incredible.
Strip to Kill, did he do that?
Dress to Kill.
Okay. Yeah.
Strip to Kill was a Greg Evigan film that we saw this video.
Anyway, like sleazemonger. Exactly. You know, of some talent.
Unfortunately, Brian De Palma, I mean, the guy, I mean, he also made Scarface, The Untouchables, etc. But I mean, the guy, I mean, his last movie was abysmal. It was called Passion. With Rachel McAdams and Naomi Rapace, and it was unwatchable. But anyhow, this was early De Palma. This was the guy at the top of his game. So basically, Phantom of the Paradise, I mean, for those who are fans of Rocky Horror Picture Show, in my opinion, that film is way overrated. I mean, I'm not...
Phantom just kills it.
Phantom, if you're looking for, you know, a rock, musical, cinematic, this, I mean, Phantom of the Paradise is incredible. I mean, you have all these, I mean, you know, all these illusions. I mean, first of all, not only, of course...
Victor Hugo.
Not only, and beyond that, I mean, of course, you're going to... Phantom of the Paradise, you're referencing, you know, Phantom of the Opera by Gaston Leroux, of course, and the subsequent cinematic adaptations. But you also have echoes of Goethe's Faust, you know. Basically, somebody sells his soul to the devil for rock and roll, so to speak. And
Andrew Lloyd Webber is nowhere to be found. The music is actually really good.
Really good. And the music is written by Paul Williams, who's one of the stars of the movie. He plays Swan. He's this sort of Faustian character who... He's this really kind of strange-looking...
Yeah, strange sort of, you know... Yeah, midget. Homunculus, little midget-y character, yeah.
But no, I mean, he plays Swan, who is, you know, made a deal with the devil, and then basically he then...
Sort of like Robert Johnson, who made a deal with the devil, and then he could play his guitar really well.
But see, what Swan did was that he ended up, then taking that deal and moving on to Winslow Leach, who's our protagonist, and William Finley, who is the guy that got his face disfigured in the record press. Moving on with the Phantom... comparisons, the Christine character in this case is Phoenix, played by Jessica Harper, who I adore because Jessica Harper was in one of my all-time favorite movies, Suspiria.
Yes.
She was the lead actress in that. I mean, the girl's cute as a button, adorable. Can't dance worth a lick. I mean,
this movie. Yeah, cast her as a ballet dancer, but, you know, don't worry about that dancing.
Well, even in
a secondary concern.
I mean, her dancing was, I mean, it made, like, you know, Elaine Bennis, you
look
know.
Like look like Baryshnikov.
Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, again, going on with the illusions, I mean, there's also Dorian Gray. I mean, it goes on and on and on. As you said before, Victor Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
Another actor of note in this one, Garrett Graham. We talked about him in Terror Vision.
Yeah, the patriarch of the family, yeah.
He plays this the pseudo-rock star named Beef. This really sort of weird, a fat character who... I mean, so basically, Paul Williams plays Swan, who owns this club called The Paradise, and he also owns a record label called Swan Records, which originally was going to be called... It was called Death Records. They had to change it to Death Records because originally it was called Swan Records, but they got sued by Led Zeppelin. Because Led Zeppelin's record company was Swan Song.
There you go.
So he was looking for the perfect music to open his new Club of Paradise with, and he had this band called the Juicy Fruits. And they were sort of this, like, Shawna-esque, you know, 50s doo-wop group, and they just weren't cutting it. Then there's this character, Winslow Leach, who has this incredible, you know, operetta, libretto that he's writing based on the Faust legend, and Swan thinks, yep, this is what's going to open the paradise, but Winslow is not, you know, your typical photogenic rock star, so due to certain machinations that here and there, I mean, basically Winslow gets disfigured, he gets sent to prison, his music is stolen, he ends up getting disfigured, he ends up haunting the paradise. He sells his soul to the devil and on.
Parallels with Led Zeppelin, allegedly stealing from blues musicians from the 50s and 60s.
Exactly. No, it's quite true.
You know, Lemon Song and whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatnot.
So, talking about the Kiss connection, the Juicy Fruits, I mean, the band, they keep changing personas.
Yeah.
And near the end of the film, they come out wearing, you know, full face paint, kind of Kabuki-esque makeup. And I forget the name of the band at this point, but now they're this sort of Kiss-esque band, and they're playing this concert, playing the music that was stolen from Winslow, and they're dismembering audience members left, right, and center. And the audiences are just cheering on, you know, sort of like, you know, Roger Waters, I mean, when he wrote The Wall, that was his impetus. Is he basically said, you know, like, we're at this point now, our audience just doesn't give a shit anymore. Like, we could just stand there and just spin their face and they would cheer us on.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of, you know, along the lines of that theme. Couple other interesting facts about Phantom of the Paradise. Rod Serling did the opening voiceover from The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
There's a really, really cool scene. I mean, Brian De Palma is known for his use of split screen and his use of homage, right? So, of course, I mean, you said...
Homage.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny story about that. While Hitchcock was still alive, Brian De Palma was making these films that were Hitchcockian, to say the least, and he infuriated Alfred Hitchcock because of the fact that, you know, Hitchcock perceived him as an absolute hack ripoff. Once Alfred passed on, once the great master passed on, he no longer made Hitchcockian movies. That's when he started making, like, you know, your Scarfaces and whatnot. Yeah. So I don't know if De Palma just had this, you know, axe to grind with Hitchcock and wanted to just infuriate the old boy, but anyhow, there's this one scene, though. It's this long shot where there's a bomb in a car set to explode, which is an homage to Orson Welles, Touch of Evil.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, Phantom of the Paradise, this is, in my opinion, this is one of the most underrated, underseen films. I mean, every time I see a midnight showing of Rocky Horror Picture Show,
wish the audience could be seeing this instead. It's just far superior. The music, the performances, the story, everything about it is just
the look of the film. Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's something to be said about Rocky Horror. I mean, it's got its moments.
Susan Sarandon's boobs?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all.
She's not a pneumatic Barbara Steele like Randy Delacroix, but I mean, you know, yeah, Susan Sarandon. I mean, you know, it's got a couple catchy numbers here and there, but it's, you know what, honestly, every time I see a poster of the Rocky Horror midnight screen, I just want to tear it down and paste up Phantom of the Paradise. Amazingly enough, when Phantom of the Paradise was released originally in cinemas, it was a complete flop. Everywhere except for one place. You know where that place is, right?
No.
Winnipeg.
Interesting.
Winnipeg, Ontario, yeah.
Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Sorry, my mistake. Winnipeg, Manitoba, yes. Maybe one too many paps as we're recording this podcast.
We are drinking rather heavily. Yes, apologies to, yeah. Yeah. Being Canadian, we should know better.
Although we're not drinking Canadian beer, are we?
No, we're not.
We're drinking...
We're drinking beer from Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yeah.
So it's all coming back to the Green Bay Packers and the great state of Wisconsin.
You see, this is all...
This all comes together.
Yes,
in a previous podcast, we discussed how there were so many serial killers that came out of the state of Wisconsin, but you can visit Texas Chainsaw for that, where we talk about Ed Gein and, you know, and Jeffrey Dahmer and that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, Ed Gein.
It was
Jeffrey
a hit
Dahmer.
In Winnipeg, Manitoba.
It was a huge hit. It played for months and months and months on end.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, they have revivals, and of course, this film has developed a cult following. Again, not as big a cult following as it deserves, but unfortunately, we no longer have Paul Williams or William Finley. They both passed on. But, I mean, they would appear at a semi-annual Phantom Fest in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And
cool.
Jessica Harper was there as well. She would go. Garrett Graham would show up. Jessica Harper, another funny story, because I talked about that, you know, Rocky Horror sort of stealing Phantom Paradise's thunder. Rocky Horror had a sequel called Shock Treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near successful. It was pretty much a flop. Sarandon decided not to reprise her role as Janet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who took over for her?
No.
Jessica Harper.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then Jessica Harper just kind of disappeared from acting, which is a shame, because I really did enjoy her screen. She had these doe-like eyes. Really, really, really cute. Great singing voice, but as I said, one more little fact. Before they cast Jessica Harper, Linda Ronstadt was up for the role, and she was this close to being cast.
She was no good? Is that what you're saying?
They just couldn't sign her
on
the dotted
line. You're no good. Terrible.
No good.
Great song. Check it out. Linda Ronstadt. Incredible voice.
And yeah, exactly. Now on that note, you're no good.
Hopefully this podcast is slightly better than
hopefully
that.
Hopefully this podcast was a little good, you know? Yeah.
So those were your seminal low-budget influences.
Yeah, I mean, those are three films that have stayed with me. These are films I revisit again and again and again. And
we'll be revisiting this topic for sure.
Oh, for sure.
sure. Budget podcast.
And I'd be really interested in hearing what some of our listeners, you know, what low-budget movies they...
Yeah, email us reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com and be sure and check out our site for giveaways, reviews, lists, and whatnot, reallyawfulmovies.com. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.